Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Welcome to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and this is the second episode of our special series on design. How do we elevate the design of our homes to make them feel more like us? How do we find our sense of style when it comes to the things we surround ourselves with? These are questions that potter and designer Jonathan Adler has been answering for a long time. Jonathan's introduction to design was through pottery. He was 12 years old at summer camp when he learned to work with clay, and since then he hasn't stopped. He has developed a ceramics business, opened his first store in 1998, and it has grown into a home decor empire. He now has stores all over the U.S. and London, and his designs span from furniture to rugs to pillows to accessories, and of course, always pottery. He's with me today, Jonathan. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, it is great to be here.
So before we get into your story, I would love to give people who've never been to your stores a sense of your style. I've heard you describe your taste as modern American glamour. You've also used happy chic. What do those descriptions mean to you?
I hope that if somebody comes into my store, they see an eccentric vision of an individual. As for my style, yeah, I would say modern American glamour, if I were to put it into a pithy three-word phrase, as one is supposed to do in these brand-obsessed days.
Truly.
Modern, to me, means that I strive to make design that is new and original, and I'm definitely a modernist in my orientation, mm-hmm. in the sense that I'm kind of a minimalist in a funny way. I am American, obviously, and I think that the optimism of America comes through in my oeuvre, I hope, mm-hmm. Whether that's through color or through subject matter or just that sense of abundance, I think is uniquely American. And glamour is the hardest of the three-word brand description because glamour is one of those words that no one really knows what it means.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's sort of a Rorschach test. But to me, glamour means being memorable. It means being confident and a little bit shiny and having swagger. So yeah, modern American glamour, c'est moi.
Yeah, amazing. I'm going to attempt to describe your work a little bit too, and you can tell me what you think, but it feels to me like it's some combination of playfulness, but still this polished aesthetic that it all sort of fits into. Like you have these bright colors combined with creams and chairs shaped like hands that kind of hold you up and cookie jars that say ganja or calories on them instead of cookies. We bought my sister your Georgia lamp, which is a white porcelain vase that looks like it may have bubbles or dollops on it. And you look closer and it's just breasts. It's just boobs. It's surrounded by boobs.
Yes, it is covered by breasts. And I think as for the playfulness, I think playfulness mm-hmm. is a really strange and interesting concept in design. I never want my work to feel juvenile or mm-hmm. overly playful. So I think that I strive to create design that is unimpeachably chic, elegant, made of perfect materials, timeless. And if there is a whisper of playfulness, then I think I've earned it by creating a foundation of chic and elegance, if that makes any sense at all.
I think so. It's interesting that within the design world, there's weight to these words, and outside of it, a lot of us don't know what words mean what.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you an anecdote that's kind of germane. My adorable husband, Simon Doonan, once interviewed Hardy Ames, who was the Queen's couturier. And, you know, the Queen used to wear sort of primrose yellow suits with matching hats and a matching bag. It was not terribly chic. And Simon said to Hardy Ames, why didn't you make the Queen's outfits more chic? And Hardy Ames replied disdainfully, my dear, there is an unkindness to chic. The Queen must always appear friendly. And when he sort of told me that anecdote, I thought long and hard about it because it's true. Chic has a snobism to it. And as an American, I'm very anti-snob. I came from a crappy farm town. I'm anything but a snob, but I'm also a very serious designer. And so balancing the elegance and quality of chic with a slightly more friendly tone is kind of my life's work.
Why don't we go back? I understand that your early introduction to design was through pottery. And we know this. You were introduced to it at summer camp. Can you tell me sort of what you loved about it originally and then like what opened up to you over time as you kept doing it?
People love pottery. It's a primordial, very primitive relationship. And I just fell in love with clay. I knew it had to be my jam. I, you know, went to a fancy college.
Right, you went to Brown.
And never thought I could be a potter. I thought that, you know, I would never make a living, which is a reasonable assumption. And I anticipated a life in which my weekends were spent hawking my wares at rain-soaked craft fairs. And I don't know, bit by bit, I got some orders, I made some pots, I started with nothing, I had no business plan, I had no money, and I just figured it out over time. And I think my challenge over the years has been how to maintain that feeling of outsiderness while becoming very much an insider. You know, because the outsiderness is what gives my work an authentic POV. And as I have built a business and become more of an insider, you know, the challenge is how to maintain that voice, that quirkiness, that I hope singular personality.
Yeah. I like that you say that our relationship with pottery is primal. I'm curious about like also the home, like what it is about designing objects for the home that appeals to you or like creating environments in the home. Like why the home? It also feels like maybe primal isn't the right word, but it feels like foundational.
It definitely is foundational. And I'm like restless, frustrated, and irate. And I'm always looking around and just being like, how could this be better? Mm-hmm. And that really is what has driven me from being a potter to being whatever the hell I am these days, a designer of everything. Because, you know, I just sort of look at every vista and vignette and I'm eternally dissatisfied. I'm thinking, how could that be better? I'm in my house right now and I just think, how could that view be better? What is missing from the area I'm looking at, even as we speak? So I'm constantly sort of recomposing and reimagining what could be rather than what is. And, you know, I hope that I suffer for the pleasure of others.
I would love to explore with you how listeners can find their own sense of style, how to make their home feel like when they walk in, like it's really recognizable and singular and sort of like it can only be theirs. I find that your work, like when I see it, I know that it's yours. I'm curious if you have any initial thoughts about how someone could figure out what's them.
First and foremost, you need to be willing to put in the effort and to not get overly frustrated and to not hate yourself. Because honestly, designing is redesigning in the same way writing is rewriting. And I think the real challenge is like often you'll do something, you'll make a try, it'll suck, you'll hate yourself, and you won't be willing to take the time to think, all right, I screwed this up, but what could I have done? How could I make it better? Like, how can I fix the problem? And so people
like the wrong paint color or the wrong buying the wrong couch.
Yeah. And so you might just have to repaint. You might have to figure out how to just throw a shmata over the sofa that might solve the problem. You know, it's not like you screwed up once and so you suck and it's all over and you have to give up. It sounds frivolous to talk about design, but there, in some ways, it really is a metaphor for so many different creative endeavors and life endeavors, oddly. So, you know, that sort of need to be resilient and to try and roll up your sleeves and make it work. Now, as for how to start, I think that whatever your style is, the foundation of your home and of your space needs to be free of style, in the sense that you need to decide on furniture plan, proportion, and function. So those are sort of, those same issues could be addressed whether you are a minimalist, a maximalist, whether you like gray or fuchsia. It's still about furniture plan, proportion, and function.
Right.
Then you can start to think about how those elements, the big pieces in the room, let's say rug, sofa, layout, lighting, then you can start to inject personality. I'm a varsity player, so I'm like aggressively eclectic and I'm sort of a visual thrill seeker. But there's ways to be a JV player and still have a really functional and personal space.
I should say, when we're talking about JV and varsity, these are very American sports terms, like high school sports terms for junior varsity and varsity. So the sort of like almost there version versus the pro is kind of the analogy.
Yeah, I think if you're in England, you would definitely not know what junior varsity or varsity are. But
yeah,
it's sort of like the championship versus the Premier League.
So what would be an example of a varsity decision versus versus a JV decision?
Bro, I'm in my sunroom and it's like a room surrounded by different double doors. And we have a sofa against windows with a painting hung over the door frame.
Oh, wow.
On the windows, because we don't use that door. So it sort of signifies you can't use it. And there is a gigantic red fiber ball made by a noteworthy fiber artist from the 70s called Claire Zeisler, juxtaposed with an Italian goatskin bar cabinet and a sculpture of Michael Jackson that we bought at the flea market for $10, just because they kind of all work proportionally. And it's a freaky scene, but it satisfies me and my eye. And as I said, my husband, Simon.
And then what would a JV version of that be? Say, like, we know where our furniture goes. We've got a couple nice rugs, but we don't have, we haven't hung a lot on our walls yet, or we haven't painted our walls, or how would you start to inject some personality?
I guess I would start small. I think that's the safe way to play it. So things, this is a pretty banal answer, but it's kind of true. Throw pillows are a place to inject personality, smaller items. I think also the JV move is to create a very neutral foundation. So whether that's white walls, neutrally toned furniture and rugs and that kind of thing, and then introduce elements of color and personality with accessories.
Yeah. You know, I read you said something like, so many people shy away from using color in their homes for fear of getting it wrong, but ignorance and fear are no reason to live in a bland box. Appreciated that. Beige is a bummer, you said. How do people build the confidence to paint their wall that color green that I see behind you?
Start small, train the eye, become connoisseurial. It's not a talent, it's a skill. Something one can easily learn, and you should sort of dispel the notion that there are some gifted professionals and that you're just a rank amateur. The old Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours paradigm holds true in design as in so many other pursuits.
The last question I want to ask you about our homes is, I'm going to paraphrase you because I don't remember exactly what you said, but you said something that stuck with me, which is basically that part of what interior design is to be a psychologist sort of for the person that you're helping figure out their home and kind of figuring out who they are almost better than they know themselves and pushing them to be a little bit bolder or a little bit more themselves, that sort of thing. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. I should say that in addition to being a potter, designer, et cetera, I also am an interior designer working with clients. And I love it because it's sort of like being a sleuth. I kind of Miss Marple my way into people's personalities. Mm-hmm. I like to say I'm like a slimming mirror for my clients. I try to create spaces that reflect them at their thinnest and most glamorous. So you need to understand who they are in a way that the client might not even understand themselves.
I wonder if there's something in that for the rest of us. Like, is there something in the idea that our homes can be not the more sort of conservative versions of ourselves, but actually the bolder versions of our personalities?
Yeah, well, in the world of branding that has emerged, people are often advised to come up with three-word brand descriptions. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to try to do the same for yourself. Like, think about who you are and then think about how your house could reflect it. Like, you, Lila, you're young and pretty.
Thank you.
We'll make that one word, young and pretty.
Okay.
I'm sure you are an intellectual, because I'm a tremendous intellectual and you and I are completely existing on the same plane.
Okay.
So I think you're young and pretty and intellectual. And then what else are you?
I mean, you said something about yourself that you were sort of, there's like a touch of hedonism in you. I don't know if there's a touch of hedonism in me, but there's something weird. I think there's something weird that I find in my home.
All right, I'm listening. I get the sense you ain't basic.
Thanks.
So your house should reflect that. But anyway, I get super Oprah-y sounding when I talk about design. I really don't mean to, but it's inevitable.
Yeah.
It's sort of a chance to think about who the hell you are and how that can be reflected. And sometimes it requires brutal honesty about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my case, I have kind of a funny and ironic, perplexing reflection in that I'm quite, I have to thank my husband. Thank you for the cup of tea, darling. I am quite ascetic in my life. You know, even though I'm a potter, which you would imagine potters are constantly like taking mushrooms and smoking pot all day, I'm very clean living, disciplined, and simple. Mm-hmm. And so, ironically, my house is really a fun house mirror of who I am, because my true life is quite ascetic, but my space, my house, looks very louche and hedonistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by sort of taking stock of who you are, you might find that you want to project something that's the exact opposite of who you are.
Yeah.
Deep thoughts, bro.
Well, I think even like that process of figuring out, of using your home to ask yourself questions about yourself is fun.
Well, it's also really fun to come up with a three-word description for yourself and for your loved ones, and to use it as an opportunity for hostility.
Like, so to roast them, yeah.
My friends and Simon and I, we all sort of have played this game where we come up with the three words, and sometimes it involves brutality, you know, sort of telling people who they are, not who they think they are. So that's always fun.
That will haunt me. I'm going to think about what my words are now for the rest of the day.
You should, and think about vicious ones as well.
My last question, Jonathan, is just, you know, big picture, when it comes to living a good and satisfying and rewarding and kind of joyful life, why does all of this matter?
Well, don't look to me for answers on living a good and satisfying and joyful life, because my three words are not good, satisfying, and joyful. They're probably more like restless, frustrated, and Kafka-esque.
Okay, so what about this? What about when it comes to living a creative and rewarding life? Why does all of this matter?
I think that it all comes back to glamour. I think that it matters because you want to be memorable to others, but you also want to be able to look back and think about what a memorable life you have led. You know, glamour is typically associated with something that's frivolous, decadent, and not altruistic. But you know what? You might want to look back and realize that you've led a very pious life and that that's what makes you memorable, or you've helped others and that's what makes you memorable, as long as you've done it with tremendous conviction. So I think the key is to do whatever you do, whether it's altruism, hedonism, or whatever it is, just turn it up to 11.
Jonathan, this was an absolute delight. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure chatting with you. Think about your brand. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about myself.
Yeah. What a joy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to the second episode of our special design series on life and art from FT Weekend. Take a read through the show notes. We have put some fun, relevant links in from our conversation with Jonathan, and all our links that take you to the FT will get you past the paywall. Also in the show notes is a discount to a subscription to the Financial Times and ways to stay in touch with me on email and on Instagram. I read everything you send. I am Lila Raptopoulos, and here is my brilliant team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Zach St. Louis is our contributing producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metaphor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer, and our global head of audio is Cheryl Brumley. Have a lovely few days, and we'll find each other again on Friday.